Hello, bonjour, agus chia div. Welcome to the Irish in Canada, the podcast exploring the histories and legacies of Irish immigrants and their Canadian descendants. I'm your host, Jane McGaughey. This is season 3, episode number 3, Sir Guy Carleton and the Quebec Act. The man was dying. He knew it. His wife knew it. The doctor, who had given up hope a few hours before, had already packed up his medical bag and was now just waiting. Waiting for the end. Waiting to be paid. Waiting to spread the news. No one had expected this. Even though the Baron was nearly 85, he hadn't been ill. But now, he was on his deathbed. And although this was a sudden turn of events, Sir Guy Carleton, 1st Baron Dorchester, Governor of Quebec, Governor General of the Canadas and British North America, Defender of Quebec City, and son of County Tyrone, knew what he wanted his wife to do. "Maria," he whispered. When Lady Dorchester leaned over the bed, he could see the worry and fear in her eyes. They'd been through so much in their 36 years together. War, loss, triumph, 11 children. And Guy knew he hadn't always been the easiest man to live with. But his wife was here, and he needed her now.
"Maria."
"Yes, dear?"
"My papers."
"Yes?"
"Burn them."
"What? All of them?" He nodded.
"Everything you can find."
"But
everything, Maria. Promise me."
He watched as she bit her lip.
"Start now," he wheezed.
"But now," he croaked, lifting his head slightly off the pillow before staring at the large fire roaring away in the hearth. It was a cold November in England. They'd needed fires blazing most evenings. It made it all very convenient. "All right, Guy, I will."
"Everything," he whispered.
"Everything," she promised. For the next full hour, the Baron's bedroom at Stubbing's house was filled with the sound of crackling, dying paper as Lady Dorchester fed page after page to the flames. And Guy Carleton rested easier as life slipped further and further away from him. Now, no one would ever know. All right, confession time. It probably didn't happen that way. But that's how I always envisioned the deathbed scene of Sir Guy Carleton, like something out of a Regency novel. I've read all sorts of biographies and papers and articles about Carleton, later raised to the peerage as Lord Dorchester. And we know basically four things about how he died. It was November of 1808. He was at his home near Maidenhead, England. It was sudden. And before he breathed his last, he made his wife burn his personal papers, an act that, ever since, has made me, and I presume many other historians, scream hopelessly into the void. This season on The Irish in Canada, we deal with several individuals and families who, either by deliberate choice or misadventure or just the hand of fate, didn't leave behind many or any personal papers, which makes the historian's job really quite difficult. Hands down, the type of source I've used most often in my own research, outside of official government documents or medical records, are letters, diaries, pieces of personal correspondence, insights into a person's thoughts and emotions. Think back to our season 1 episode on the Gowans. If we didn't have those love letters between James Gowan and his cousin's wife, Frances, we would be missing a tremendously important piece of the puzzle in figuring out how and why that family fell out with each other. In my PhD thesis, I use both letters and diaries from Irish soldiers fighting in the trenches during the Great War. In my current work on the Irish and Canadian lunatic asylums, the letters to and from family members reveal things that medical questionnaires and doctor's notes just can't tell us. Historians rule number 1, sources matter. And if that's the case, then what the hell do we do with Guy Carleton, And this really matters because of all the people, Irish, Scots, English, French, Indigenous, American, all the others, all the men and women who shaped modern Canada, Guy Carleton is one of the most important. If Thomas Scott was one of the Irishmen who had the most serious, if unintended, legacies in Canada, then Guy Carleton is one whose every public act was loaded with intention, significance, and consequence. He's that important. Why? Fair question. Because today, you might only recognize his name because there are a lot of things named after him. Carleton University in Ottawa, for example, or Dorchester Square in my own neck of the woods. Sir Guy Carleton is important to Canada, is perhaps the Irish person who has had the longest lasting impact on the nation, because through one piece of legislation, he gave us a centerpiece of Canadian identity. For better or worse, for richer or poorer, the Quebec Act is our national blueprint. It's why Canada is French and English and not American. So, who was he? Guy Carleton was born on the 3rd of September, 1724, in Strabane, County Tyrone. His grandfather, great-grandfather, and great-great-grandfather all had the truly awesome name of Lancelot Carleton, but as the third son, he didn't get the sexy Arthurian first name and ended up as just, well, Guy. He did, however, win in terms of ultimate prestige and landholdings. By the end of his life, Guy Carleton was not only one of the most famous men in the world, but he also owned 12,000 acres of land in County Tyrone. In Canadian measurements, that's the same size as over 30,000 NHL hockey rinks. Not too bad. When it started, however, his career didn't look that promising. Extra sons are a tricky lot. Just ask Prince Harry. Guy wasn't the oldest, so he wasn't about to inherit the family estate. Instead, he ended up doing what a lot of spare Irish Protestant sons did. He joined the military. He was commissioned as an ensign at the age of 17 and was a lieutenant by 20. But he was well into his 30s before he got his first big break, the Seven Years' War. The Seven Years' War was the major colonial battle between Britain and France in the 1750s that decided the future of both Canada and the American colonies. Many historians now talk about it as the first quote-unquote World War because it happened simultaneously in North America, Europe, and the Indian subcontinent. For most Canadians, however, the entire war boils down to just 15 minutes on the morning of September 13th, 1759, on the Plains of Abraham outside of Quebec City. And Guy Carleton was there. The two commanders at the Plains of Abraham that fateful day were British Major General James Wolfe and the French commander, Louis-Joseph Marquis de Montcalm. Now, I'm going to make a bit of a leap with this next metaphor, but bear with me. Wolfe had specifically asked for Guy Carleton to be made his quartermaster general for the campaign at Quebec. What is a quartermaster? Broadly speaking, it's the senior officer in charge of the army's supplies. He's got all the weapons and equipment. That's why in the James Bond movies, the tech whiz with the exploding pens and the cars with rockets is called Q. So Guy Carleton was the Q at the Plains of Abraham, which makes James Wolfe James Bond, which he really wasn't. You know, the first half of that always works really well when I teach it, and then I'm left with James Wolfe as Daniel Craig and it all falls apart. Anyway, despite getting a head wound during the 15-minute battle, Carleton survived, which neither Wolfe nor Montcalm managed to do, which then meant he was extremely well-positioned for official attention in the years that followed. In fact, only 9 years later, Guy Carleton was the new governor of Quebec. So, what was he like? Well, it depends who you ask. His contemporaries described him as cold, severe, and sour. Some of his biographers over the centuries have described him as reactionary, ruthless, and vindictive. But others insisted he was honorable, humane, and just. Canadian historian Donald Creighton saw Carleton as a man who was cocksure and emphatic in his prime, but who, after becoming Lord Dorchester in the 1780s, was baffled, old, and irritable, a quote, political Tory and a social conservative with a complacent belief in his own importance and an ingrained relish for authority, end quote. And his Irishness? Well, that came into play as well. The way he decided to govern Canada, in fact, the entire future relationship between Canada and the Crown, depended upon what had happened in Ocean Away, in Ireland. When the British took over Quebec, Ireland was an obvious template. But was it something to emulate going forward, or something to avoid? Since the 1690s, the penal laws had held sway in Ireland, a series of demeaning and humiliating government policies that punished Catholics and dissenting Protestant denominations as the other in Irish society. They eliminated Catholic military power, restricted the influence of the Catholic Church, created crippling economic disabilities for Catholic landowners, and basically excluded Catholics from public life. In the words of Irishman Edmund Burke, the penal laws were, quote, as well fitted for the oppression, impoverishment, and degradation of a people as ever proceeded from the perverted ingenuity of man, end quote. Do remember that Burke said that, because he's going to show up again before the end of this episode. In essence, the penal laws tried to force Irish Catholics to become British Protestants and punished them if they refused. This kind of treatment was fairly standard. Until 1774, the model for running any part of the British Empire was forced integration, exclusion, or in the case of the Acadians, expulsion. The proclamation of 1763 that the British had implemented in Quebec was just more of the same, voiding any previous concessions made to French Canadians after the end of the Seven Years' War, favoring Protestants in Quebec, and encouraging more of them to settle in the colony. The belief was that French Canadian culture needed to be eradicated in order to make the king's new subjects thrive as part of a British rather than a French empire. But not everyone agreed. Some people thought it was time for a change, and Guy Carleton was one of them. Carleton was officially made the governor of Quebec in 1768. His predecessor, James Murray, had urged the British administration to make allowances for French-Canadian culture and Catholicism in order to secure the population's long-term loyalty. But London had ignored that advice. Carleton, however, saw its merits. What's different, though, between Carleton and Murray is that Guy Carleton was born and raised in the north of Ireland by an Anglo-Irish military family. He was part of the small percent of the population on that island who had benefited from the Irish penal laws. However, against all expectations, he consistently and vocally advocated for a pluralist approach in Quebec. He didn't want to see French Canadians treated as Irish Catholics had been in Ireland, or, quote, the creation of an Anglo-Canadian elite to mirror his Anglo-Irish roots, end quote. Carleton believed there was no point in hoping that French Canadians would magically transform themselves into little Englishmen. Instead, they should remain as, wait for it, a distinct society in order to make sure that they would stay loyal to the British Empire. He wanted to get the French Canadian seigneur, the landed gentry of New France, on side with him and not sacrifice the long-term goals of the empire for the short-term gains of local Protestant politicians and merchants. The Quebec Act of 1774 ushered in a new era of imperial policy. Among other things, the act guaranteed freedom of religion for French Canadian Catholics, restored the Catholic Church's power to impose tithes or religious taxes, restored French civil law in Quebec while retaining English law for criminal cases, and expanded the colony to include much of modern-day southern Ontario and the states of Ohio, Wisconsin, Michigan, Indiana, and Illinois. Just think, Quebec stretched all the way from the shores of Labrador to the Mississippi River. Quebec was now the only place in the British Empire that treated Catholics and Protestants equally in public life, at a time when the penal laws still held sway in Ireland. Essentially, Quebec became a full imperial colony once more, rather than a subjugated and conquered territory. It won the support of both the French-Canadian landowners and the Catholic Church, two entities that then became extremely powerful in Quebec as a result. An unexpected, but for our purposes, important outcome was that Quebec became an immigration magnet for Catholics from Ireland and Scotland. Even while Carleton was debating how to go about creating a more inclusive imperial system, there were rumblings on the horizon. What a lot of Canadians don't realize is that by creating this act that safeguarded Quebec's future and allowed for the toleration of Catholicism and French-Canadian culture in the empire, Guy Carleton helped to push the American colonies that much closer to war. Canadians are taught that the Quebec Act was our first attempt at multiculturalism. Americans are taught that the Quebec Act was one of the intolerable acts, the pieces of legislation that drove the Americans to revolt against the British. Carleton was well aware of the threat of war in the 13 colonies. His decision to push ahead with the Quebec Act made him a lot of enemies, all of America, for instance, and quite a few in London, too. The debates about the Quebec Act that took place in Westminster really doubled down on the parallels between Ireland and Quebec. Members of Parliament who disliked the Act used the example of the conquest of Ireland as a model for how Quebec should be treated. The Act's supporters, including the Irishman Lord Clare, argued that Ireland was not the road to follow, and the penal laws were a terrible precedent that only ensured opposition to the state rather than loyalty. If they went for the tolerance and inclusiveness proposed in the Quebec Act, then eventually, maybe Canada could act as a template for Ireland. And Edmund Burke, our Irish MP who described the penal laws in such despicable terms earlier in the episode? Well, you might be surprised to learn that Burke supported the 13 colonies in the 1770s. He hated the Quebec Act. For Burke, French Canada was now British and should act like it. And what right did Carleton have to reward the former enemies of the empire at the expense of loyal American colonists? So, was the Quebec Act good or bad? Really, that's an entire other podcast. But I can say that without it, we certainly wouldn't have Canada as it is today. If official recognition of French culture and Catholicism had not been enshrined in this landmark piece of legislation, if Quebec had been treated as Ireland had been, French Canada likely wouldn't exist today. An Irishman who had grown up as part of a system that oppressed the other was the visionary behind this. But what did Guy Carleton think about this new pluralist society he had helped to create? Sadly, we don't know. Which brings us back to Sir Guy and Maria Lady Carleton as he lay dying. I started the episode with my rather flowery interpretation of their final hours together, but in some ways, their real relationship was even more over the top. Guy Carleton had been friends with Lord Thomas Howard, the Earl of Effingham, for many years. A bachelor well into his late 40s, Guy often visited the Howard family and had watched Thomas's daughters, the Lady Anne and the Lady Maria, grow up. Seeing that Guy's career was now really taking off, Lord Howard began to encourage the notion that his old friend could become his future son-in-law. He plotted a match between Sir Guy and Lady Anne. But she had been raised to think of Sir Guy as a dear friend of her father's and an honorary uncle, not as a potential husband. To use a Game of Thrones reference, Sir Guy was an Irish version of Sir Jorah Mormont, Lady Anne had friend-zoned him pretty hard. One afternoon, Lady Anne was called away to her father's office after Carlton had arrived for a visit. When she returned to her sister and their cousin, Miss Seymour, Anne was in tears. The other two women were rather surprised that she looked that way. "Your eyes would be red," she allegedly said, "if you had just had to refuse the best man on earth." You see, Lady Anne was already in love with Guy Carleton's nephew, Christopher, quite the dashing young colonel. Anne could hardly say yes to his uncle's proposal of marriage if her heart was set on getting one from the younger man. Lady Maria, however, thought her sister was an idiot. Snorting loudly, she quipped, "More fool you! I only wish he had given me the chance." A few weeks later, Miss Seymour let it slip to Sir Guy that he had proposed to the wrong sister. Shifting course, he then asked Maria to marry him. And she said yes. He was 48, and she was 19. But it seems they did live happily ever after. They had 11 children, and seemed quite close, despite his renowned crotchetiness and her excessive sense of ceremony and custom, which she had gained while attending school at the French court of Versailles. Lady Maria was exactly the kind of wife who would fulfill the dying wishes of her beloved husband, even if that meant burning every personal paper from his office that she could find, which she did. When I tell the story of Sir Guy Carleton in my class every year, I always take a slight pause and make a request of my students, and I'm going to end this episode by doing it again now. For the love of all that's holy, don't delete your emails. You don't have to keep them in the cloud forever. You can declutter your inbox every now and then. But before you drag anything into that little trash can on your screen, first print them out. Keep them somewhere safe, like a nice box in the attic or a shelf down in the basement. And then one day, long in the future, hand them over to your grandchildren and tell them to donate your personal papers to the national, provincial, or state archives of wherever you may be from. Because, as I said before, sources matter. The physicality of sources matter. They have a permanence and a primacy that's vital. Technology moves so quickly towards the future at the cost of everything that came before. Don't forget, social media posts are public statements, not necessarily private thoughts. There is a difference. So, just don't do a Dorchester. Don't hit delete. Don't burn the damn things in the fire. Because I would love to tell you what Sir Guy Carleton really thought, deep down. But I can't, because he didn't want me to. Sir Guy Carleton, 1st Baron Dorchester, might very well have been the greatest Irishman in Canadian history. His crafting of the Quebec Act determined the shape and content of modern Canada as a bilingual and multicultural nation, and he defended the colony against the Americans during their revolution to make sure that we remained Canadian and didn't become part of the United States. But without his personal papers to give us that extra layer of private insight, we can never be truly sure of who he really was. We can't know him. What we do have, 250 years on, is the Quebec Act, which has been fundamental in defining what it means to be Canadian. Thanks for listening to The Irish in Canada. The show was researched, written, and narrated by me, Jane McGaughey. This season was edited and mixed by Patrick McMaster and produced by Marion Mulvena. Our theme music was composed and performed by Kate Bevan Baker, and our logo was designed by Claire McCauley. Many thanks to the School of Irish Studies at Concordia University in Montreal, the Canadian Irish Studies Foundation, Le Gouvernement de Québec, and the Social Sciences and Humanities Research Council of Canada for their support. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast app. You can spread the word about The Irish in Canada by following us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram at Irish Canada Pod. Our website is the irishincanadapodcast.ca. That's where you can find show notes for our episodes, including lists of sources and recommendations for further reading. Until next time, Gorama Agif.